Welcome to Crosspoint.
Welcome to Crosspoint.
Welcome to Crosspoint.
We are an inclusive faith community
seeking to live out the loving, just, and generous way of Jesus.
We are participants in a long tradition
that's less concerned with doctrines and dogma that demand total agreement,
but a life to be lived, enjoyed, and given away to others.
What unites us is a growing awareness that life is precious,
that we are made by love in order to love.
This community is comprised of and affirms the entire human family,
regardless of race, age, creed,
physical abilities, marital or economic status,
gender identity, or sexual orientation.
So, if you are curious and have come to see,
if you are tired and have come to rest,
if you are grateful and have come to share,
if you are wounded and have come to heal,
if you are joyful and have come to celebrate,
if you are uprooted and have come to belong,
welcome home.
Welcome home.
Welcome home.
Welcome home.
Hey, Crosspoint. Really good to be with you today. One thing that's been fairly constant in my conversations with people recently is that all of our hearts, it feels like, are just trying to carry and hold what can feel like an overwhelming amount of challenging realities all at the same time. I mean, of course, there's the typical dynamics of relationships and work and financial challenges, which, depending on the particular season, can feel overwhelming just in those things alone. But then you add the very tense political climate that exists and the exhausting rhetoric that is rooted in so much fear and anger these days. We have the devastating realities and stories and images brought on by the hurricane in our southeast region of the states. We have missiles and bombs being used to kill people in the midst of global conflicts. And many of us can find ourselves wrestling with our faith tradition, where things once felt so certain and formulaic, and where that once brought so much comfort and security. Now our faith has been evolving, pun intended, and it's been evolving in some ways, in healthy and important ways. And while our faith can feel more loving and inclusive and generous and expansive, it can also feel unsettling at times, because for some of us, there's just more unknowns than there used to be. And many of our hearts are trying to hold space and carry all these things, and it's a lot. And so today, I just want to try and offer not answers, but some guideposts for us as we try to navigate these different realities together. And in order to do that, I want us to look back on the Exodus story that we find in the Hebrew Bible. Some of you are familiar with it, some may not be, but here's the gist. So for about 430 years, the Israelites, the Hebrew people, were enslaved in Egypt. And in this ancient story, we discover how God uses a man named Moses to help free the Hebrew people from the bonds of slavery under Pharaoh. So you have this epic moment, right, where Moses demands of Pharaoh, "Let my people go." And then finally Pharaoh relents and lets them go. But then he changes his mind and he sends his army after them. And the Israelites find themselves stuck between the sea and Pharaoh's army. And it seems like certain death for them. But then the waters of the sea miraculously part. The Israelites are able to walk through to the other side. And then when Pharaoh's army starts to chase after them, the water collapses back down on top of Pharaoh's army, and the Israelites are suddenly free. God has liberated them from oppression. Now, this Exodus story, this story of liberation from oppression, has been the foundational and anchor story for the Hebrew people ever since. And so after their liberation, God makes it clear to the Israelites that God's vision for Israel is that they would be a new kind of tribe in the world. A new kind of nation, one that didn't exist for only its own success and survival, but instead would exist to also bring grace and goodness to all the other tribes and nations of the world. But they wouldn't be driven by greed and violence and dominance like every other tribe in the world at the time, where life basically centered around how do we protect ourselves and how do we exercise our dominance on anyone around us, but rather they would exist to be a blessing to others, or as Jesus would put it later, a light to the whole world. So to help them establish a new way of ordering themselves in the world, God gives his people what we now know as the Ten Commandments. And that at the foundation of their identity would be this covenant relationship with God, a God who is for them, who is leading them toward life and leading them toward bringing goodness to others. But as the story goes, these newly liberated Israelites find themselves in unknown territory. Entire generations of people who had no idea what it was like to not be slaves in Egypt. So they're in the desert wilderness, wandering around, following this mystic leading from God as to where they're supposed to settle. And the bottom line is, this unknown was really hard. Really hard. So much so that eventually we see the Israelites start to complain, well, if only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate the food we wanted, but you have brought us out into the desert to starve this entire assembly to death. Wouldn't it be better for us to just go back to Egypt? And they said to each other, we should choose a leader and go back to Egypt. Now, here's a people who've been in slavery for over 400 years. They've been liberated and set free from slavery, and the ambiguity and the unknown that they find themselves in is hard. And so they go, you know, why don't we just go back to being slaves in Egypt? I mean, sure, there's some downsides to that. There's some cost, but at least there's some security and stability, right? You see, whenever things get really hard, many times the typical human reflex is to revert back to what was, to go back to what's known, to go back to Egypt. And the scriptures tell us that they all grumbled and complained and wanted to go back. And we don't know if any of them actually did or not. I imagine some of them did. But the Hebrew people as a whole kept moving forward, trusting that even though they didn't know where God was leading them, that God was leading them somewhere good. Then eventually, after 40 years of wandering in the desert, the Hebrews come to what was referred to as the Promised Land, the land where they were going to settle as a people. And as they're about to enter into the land, God tells them, don't forget where you came from. Don't forget your story, that you were enslaved and that God freed you and liberated you. Don't forget the vision of light God has called you to be in the world. Don't forget and find yourself adopting the same ways of dominance and oppression and the same power structures like everyone else. So the Israelites get settled in the new land, and they start trying to figure out what it looks like to live in this covenant relationship with God and with these Ten Commandments that kind of sort of served as this relation, these relationship vows between God and the Israelites. And yet, as concrete and straightforward as the Ten Commandments sound, when you think about it, there's a lot of room for interpretation there. For example, let's take, don't use the name of the Lord your God in vain. Okay, so what does that mean? Does it mean you don't say, God, that hurt, when you stub your toe? Because if that's the case, if that makes it to like the top 10, it seems pretty petty, right? Or does it mean more like the original Hebrew implies, where it's don't attach God's name and reputation to things that don't actually align with God's heart? Like in a similar way, where we find people using the word Christian as an adjective on all sorts of things that don't necessarily align with Christ's heart today, because again, we never see the word Christian used as an adjective in the Bible. It's always a noun. It talks about people. So then let's say it's the latter. What are the metrics by which one determines whether or not God's name and reputation wrongly gets attached to something in vain? Who decides that? What are the metrics? Or think about other commandments like honor your father and mother or keep the Sabbath day holy. If we sat around and teased those out, we'd come up with probably hundreds of questions that we could debate about in terms of what each of those actually look like and what they don't look like lived out. And so that ambiguity was really hard, really hard. And so what you see in some of these early books of the Hebrew scriptures are people trying to put definition to and create all sorts of rules and rituals on how to live these out. But eventually the Israelites were like, this is messy. I mean, really messy. And so they come to the prophet Samuel and they say, we don't think this can work. So just give us a king who will just tell us what to do. I mean, this is the way it's worked for the other tribes and nations. Let's just follow their roadmap. And Samuel's like, listen, you don't want to do that. You don't want to throw in the towel. You don't want to give up on this vision that God has given us. A king will take us down a path we don't want to go. But then we read this in 1 Samuel 8:19. It says, but the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel. And they said, no, but there shall be a king over us, that we may be like all the nations, and that our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles. Just give us a king. so we can be like all the other nations. Because again, when things get hard, many times our instinct is to revert back to what's already known, to go back to the ways of Egypt. So because God is a respecter of free will, God says, okay, I've tried to warn you, but go ahead and appoint a king. And shortly afterwards, you start to find the king of Israel slowly adopting all sorts of ways and other empires and using power in a way that God had warned them to avoid. And then, and this is important, a few kings down the line, we find a king deciding to build a temple in honor of this God who liberated their very own Hebrew people from slavery in Egypt. This God who invited them into a new kind of story to be a blessing to all people. And yet, there's this one sentence in the story that can be easily overlooked. We find it in the book of 1 Kings chapter 5, where it says this. It says, King Solomon drafted forced labor out of all Israel, and the draft numbered 30,000 men. Now, I'm not sure about you, but that sure sounds a lot like slave labor to me. So just a handful of decades later, get this. We find the king of Israel enslaving his own people to build a temple for the God who liberated the Hebrews previously from slavery in Egypt. The same God who said, don't forget your own story. Take the grace that's been given to you and give it to others. But you see, when things get hard, it's very easy just to revert back to the same old power structures, the ways of dominance and oppression. Because often what's known is just preferred to what's unknown. It just is. Friends, so here's the thing. The story we're a part of, the faith tradition that we're part of, is one where God is always inviting us forward. And what's forward is almost always unknown. And that has ramifications for us in many ways. But just consider for a moment what it means for how we live out our faith and how we live out our politics. And again, I'm talking about just you and I today as people of faith and as Christ followers in the world. I'm not talking about a particular nation or a country. I'm talking about us as Christ followers and how we live this out. But how we live out our faith and politics are, in fact, not two separate things. And I want to touch on this for a moment because it does seem pretty timely, though, for those of us who live in the States right now. One of the simplest definitions I've heard of politics is that politics are how we structure our relationships with one another. And I like that. It's how we structure our relationships with one another. And so obviously then, how we live out our faith and how we live out our politics have to intertwine because how we relate to others is at the core of that. And I believe the way that God is calling us forward is that is for us not to be defined by partisan lines that demonize the other and always assume the worst of one another. Frankly, that's going back to a way we know doesn't work, a way that only brings death. That's us reverting back to, in this metaphor of reverting back to Egypt. It's why many of us have wanted to disassociate from the stereotyped assumptions of what it means for many people to be a person of faith and also engaged in political conversations. And the thing is, we might not understand what it looks like to move forward and to live out a faith in a politic that isn't trying to demonize the other, because frankly, most of us today don't remember what something different looks like. It's what we've known most of our lives. But I'm convinced that the way forward isn't just avoiding the conversation and staying silent as people of faith. And so in light of that, I want to offer us a few guideposts along the road ahead. I believe they have implications for us personally, politically, how we live out our faith. And I can't and won't try to detail all that out, but I'm hopeful it will lead to some good reflection and conversations. So one, I want to invite us to let's be people that listen. Friends, we have to listen to how and why people are hurting, why people are scared. We have to intentionally listen to voices of the vulnerable and marginalized in our culture and in our world, to those affected by systematic injustice. We have to listen to people of color, to our LGBTQI plus siblings, to those in poverty, to those struggling to make ends meet, to our neighbors down the street. And as people immersed in one of the highest technological suburban centers in the world, we also have to listen to the millions and millions of people in rural America right now who are hurting and are scared. Now, with that said, I want to be clear about something. If people are scared and claiming they're being hurt simply because they're losing grasp on their ability to exercise the dominance or superiority over someone else, if they're scared because the benefits of white supremacy and patriarchy are being systematically threatened, it's still important to listen well, to understand if that's what's actually going on. But if that's the case, then it needs to get exposed for what it is, and it needs to be dismantled. And that's always scary. But it's necessary to move forward. But I also think there are millions of other people who are unfairly get lumped into that same group that are hurting and scared and feel unheard and that need to be listened to, that need empathy and compassion, that want to link arms to solve similar problems in our world. But everyone just keeps demonizing one another, screaming on top of one another, and never actually listening to one another. So friends, as we move forward into the unknown, I'm convinced that one of the guideposts we have to pay attention to is we have to just get better at listening. A second signpost that I want to offer is let's be people that hold the leaders we individually vote for accountable for their words and actions. Here's the thing. We don't have any problem trying to hold the leaders we didn't vote for accountable for their words and actions, right? I mean, that's easy to do. It's easy to point fingers and blame and mock and shame and hold others' feet to the fire when we see them as the enemy. That's easy, and it happens all the time. And to be clear, I'm not saying don't ever bother trying to hold someone on another team responsible or accountable. Of course we should. I just think there are much healthier ways than others to go about it. But of course we should. I mean, that's what a healthy system of checks and balances looks like. But again, that's not the point here. The point here is that we already do that. And we have entire organizations and media engines that do that freely and often. We have that way of Egypt down pat. Rather, I think one of the important guideposts for the way forward is for us to be willing to hold the leaders that we support, that we vote for, accountable for their words and their actions. That we're willing to hold them accountable to basic values like integrity and honesty and the humane and equitable treatment of all people. If we're not willing to do that, then what in the world are we doing? And listen, I'm not talking to the whole nation right now, the whole world. I don't have that kind of platform. But I'm talking to you, people who at least have some interest in the way of Christ, in the way of love. And if we want to have any integrity and credibility at all to speak into other matters in our world, we have to be willing to hold our preferred teams accountable to the most basic of values. Otherwise, our silence will only fuel destructive behavior that will take us backwards toward the ways of Egypt once again. Now, here's a third guidepost for the way forward. Let's be willing to constantly remind ourselves, of course this is hard. Of course it's hard. Of course it's exhausting. Whenever you're dealing with the unknown, it doesn't matter if it's relationally or with work or with politics or faith. Of course it can be confusing and frustrating. Of course it can feel like it's tough to get any traction. Of course it's filled with all sorts of struggle and hardship. Of course it is. I've shared this before, but it was about a decade ago. I was sitting with members of our elder board here at Crosspoint. I was venting about how hard and exhausting it was trying to fund and build a YMCA. Something we'd never seen a church community do before, and there was no one to show us the way, there was no roadmap, there weren't mentors, and I was just spent, and I was fed up. And I'll never forget that moment when one of them looked at me and said very calmly, "Jonathan, of course it's hard. This is what we signed up for, to do something that we felt led by God to do that hasn't been done before. Why would we expect it to be any different?" And something significant shifted in me that day. Why was I shocked that this is the way it was? That the way forward into the unknown, into a new future, was filled with all sorts of struggle and difficulty? Of course it was. And that's true on a large scale, paradigm-shifting ways, but it's also true in smaller, everyday type of ways. For example, Let's take music in church, for example. Here's a little insider info. That's a really tough gig these days. And here's the thing. When I hear from leaders across the country who share similar values as we do as a church, every single one of them asks me about music because they admit that they're in unknown territory and it's hard. Now, to be clear, I love all of our musicians here at Crosspoint. They are uber talented. They have tremendous hearts. And so I'm so very grateful for them. I just want to let everyone know that what they're trying to do week in and week out can be extremely challenging, and it has zero to do with musical talent. So why is that? For instance, this past week, I Googled several of the top worship songs being played on the radio right now and read through the lyrics. And here's the thing. Regardless of whether one likes the particular musical style of each one, every one of them that I looked up promotes a theology or a view of God that we would teach and believe is problematic. Not just different, but problematic. For example, I've gotten emails in the past year from people who say, how can you teach this one view of God in your teaching and allow your music and lyrics that you have everyone singing to reflect a completely different God and theology? To illustrate one aspect of that tension, let's take the hymn Amazing Grace. Okay? For some, Amazing Grace is beautiful and meaningful, and it connects us to our tradition, and we absolutely love it. For others, they may hear a lyric in the song like, Amazing Grace that saved a wretch like me. And it conjures up feelings of shame, where the religious framework that they were handed, you know, maybe years ago or as a child or at some point in their life, was that they were a wretch of a person. They were disgusting in God's eyes unless or until they did something, confessed something, changed something. They weren't raised to believe that the starting place for how God sees them as love, that they're valuable and loved and have tremendous worth just as they are. And so the constant wrestle is, do we lean into one side of the tension where the emotional connection, the familiarity, the anchoring us in our tradition is the higher value? Or do we lean into the tension of what words are we putting on people's lips and hearts that we want echoing back in their head throughout a week? And are those healthy ideas? And then does it have to be all or nothing? Or is there space to still sing certain songs and recontextualize them in a healthier ways that don't risk causing harm? And the thing is, all those various tensions have value. They do. And so when we're making choices about music, in many ways, we're trying to lean into different sides of those tensions. And as a result, we're navigating new and unknown territory many times, and it can be a struggle. But in the big picture, that's still such a small thing, right? And so when we consider the work we're trying to do collectively that involves confronting religious powers and structures that no longer resemble the ways and teachings of Jesus, systems or practices or rhetoric that hurt and dehumanize people, it's really hard, right? And so when you might feel lost or angry or disoriented, when it feels like you can't make sense of the world around you and what people are saying and how they're acting and it makes no sense, listen, of course you feel that way. Of course you do. It's really hard. But you're not alone. And you're not the first that have felt that way. This is how change always happens. For millions of us in this world, what's been passed down to us is to go after safety, comfort, security, and what's known at all cost. That we need to protect and defend and stay exactly where we've always been, because what we've been told is that's the tradition. That's what we do. That everything we ever needed to know was written down 2,000 years ago in a collection of songs, poems, stories, and history, and that anything new we could possibly learn from science or psychology or even the spirit of Christ for our particular time and culture today, many of us have been told, well, that's heretical. Friends, just understand, that's not the faith tradition we're actually a part of. We're part of a faith tradition that's invited to go forward into the unknown, to keep growing and to keep learning. But here's the thing. When we actually live that out, it will always threaten the status quo. It always will seem threatening to the institutions that are used to being in power, no matter what kind of institution it is. And it's hard. And sometimes you'll be labeled and dismissed. And at times it will get lonely and isolating. But you see, friends, that's why understanding our history and understanding our own story that we're a part of is so important. We've centered our faith around Jesus of Nazareth, who was executed by the religious and political systems of his day because of the disruption to the system that he caused, and because of his challenge to the previously understood and accepted way of seeing God and treating people. Again, this is our faith tradition. This is the story of the people of faith that we link arms with. Those who are willing to move forward into the unknown, because that's where God is leading us. Forward. And it will continue to be hard and challenging and uncomfortable at times. Of course it will. Confronting bias and prejudices in ourselves, confronting systems of oppression and injustice and bigotry and supremacy, of course that's hard. Holding our own patterns and words and behaviors up to the mirror and ways and teachings of Christ, and learning how to be more loving and forgiving and patient and generous, of course that's hard. It's really hard. Advocating for the goodness of all people, to be the light to the world that people of our faith tradition have been called to be for thousands of years, of course that's hard. Or when we find ourselves personally at times, perhaps feeling like we may not need church anymore, or it's not meeting some of our stylistic preferences, or we think it doesn't really matter if we show up or not. Friends, I just want you to know that sometimes, sure, there can certainly be wise, healthy reasons for your own self why you don't participate during particular seasons of life. Absolutely. Big advocate of that. But I also want you to know that for some of you, I want you to be reminded that simply choosing to show up and participate can mean the world to someone else. Or someone can walk into our space on a Sunday or join in an online conversation and they see you. And maybe from what they've experienced in their own families or what they've seen and heard from loud voices in the news or online, they assume that people who fit your description in whatever way that applies to you, that they don't want to do anything with them. They don't want to have anything to do with them. That's their perception. And so your willingness to show up and share space, it matters a lot. Now, again, we're all at different points in our journeys, so this isn't for everyone, but some of us need to be reminded that the primary filter we need to shift away from is one of what can I get out of this to what can I give to this? With my presence, with my effort, with my time, and yes, even though it's uncomfortable to say, with my resources to help this community be a light in the world and keep moving forward. But those kind of shifts can be hard and uncomfortable. And it's tempting to just want to go back to what's familiar, to what's comfortable, to let others handle it, to avoid difficult tensions and topics, just to go back to Egypt. And I get that. Because that can be in me as well, because I like things to be easy. Of course I do. But I just want to remind us, Crosspoint, our story is forward. The Christ that we follow says that every scripture, every instruction from God, every ounce of our faith ultimately boils down to love your neighbor as yourself. But here's the thing we have to keep in mind. Just like when we think about the Ten Commandments and how many countless specific questions that those Ten Commandments raised about how to live them out, and then you take 10 and you boil it down to one, love your neighbor as yourself. When you think about that, that requires a lot of interpretation among a community of people, because that's a ton of ambiguity. And you may not have realized this before, but that's really hard. And it can be really messy trying to figure out what that looks like in a never-ending list of unfolding moments and opportunities and situations where we have to wrestle with, what does love look like here in this moment with this person right in front of me? And yet, that's what the very Spirit of Christ invites us forward into. And absolutely, there's costs that come with that. Every time you venture into new territory, there are costs. There's no turn-by-turn direction GPS with every situation laid out detailing, okay, here's what love looks like here and in this moment, in this situation. Instead, we collectively follow the ways and teachings of Jesus, the Spirit of Christ. We listen and we learn. We wrestle and we discern. And together, we do our best to follow and live that out in our world today, in our context now. But let's not forget that there's also cost of refusing to move forward and just staying back where it's comfortable and secure. And the reality is, when you think about that, those are much greater costs. And so our invitation is to keep following the Spirit of Christ forward. And yes, it will be hard. Of course it will be. Because when you choose the way of love, it's just hard. Of course it is. I'm also convinced that it's the best way to go. As we wrap this up, there's just one more guidepost I want to offer you. Let's be people that practice self-care, self-compassion, and rest along the way. Your willingness to rest can be an act of love, even when it seems like the storms are raging all around you. Let's not forget that the Jesus we follow took time to rest in a boat in the middle of a raging storm. As I said up front, there are a lot of heavy things going on in our world right now, and that will only ratchet up even more, and the election here in the States gets closer and closer. And so I have no idea what all types of hard await us, but I'm not surprised that it's going to be hard. Of course it will be. It's how change happens. And so I hope that one of the guideposts along the way for all of us will be that we will take moments to rest, to laugh, to share a good meal, to walk away from the news and social media for a bit, to play games, to be present with loved ones in person and in online spaces. A while back, the Wall Street Journal released an article that says in an average NFL football game, there's only about 11 minutes of actual football played. The remaining 3 to 3.5 hours are in between plays, on the sidelines, conversations, rest. None of us would accuse the players in the middle of the action of being selfish for having periods of rest between plays, because that's how one actually makes it through the whole game, a whole season, a whole career. And so, friends, this is a long road. So give yourself grace. Let's give each other grace. Take moments to pause and rest and take care of yourself, because the way of love is hard. And the only way to do it well and to keep moving forward is when we follow what Jesus says is the foundation of everything, to love your neighbor as yourself. And so love yourself so that we can together love our neighbors and our world shockingly well. You're loved. See you next week.
If you would like to know more or get connected to Crosspoint, go to crosspoint.org. If you're in need of care or assistance, go to crosspoint.org/care. And welcome home.